It's not just good conversation, it's your voice on the weekends. Weekends with Kenny Rahmeyer on News Radio KLBJ.
It's really a pleasure to listen to you.
Hey, I look forward to your shows on the weekend, by the way.
Hey, listen, this is a great topic.
Ah, Kenny, great show.
I really enjoy listening to you when you're all by yourself.
Come on, talk to me. What's going on? What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? What's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. What's going on?
And good afternoon to you. Well, I'm glad that lady's liking listening to me all by myself, because I'm guessing that's pretty much where I am this afternoon. On Easter weekend, Easter Sunday, live and local for you here on News Radio KLBJ, along with executive producer Garrett, of course. But we are live and local for you this afternoon on this Easter holiday weekend. Hope you're having a safe and happy Easter holiday. We've got lots of things to talk about with you this afternoon. Some disturbing local news. I'll get to that in just a moment. Some powerful Easter messages this weekend. Some of them caught up in the culture wars. And the most powerful messages not from the leading politicians in our country. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Some presidential politics to get to this afternoon. How about this? Are you ready for self-driving big rigs out on the highways? Now, we know there's been disastrous results in some cities where a lot of the autonomous cars have been tested, right? How about some of these autonomous big rigs, big 18-wheelers rolling down the highway? It's coming sooner than you might think. And Texas is ground zero for testing these autonomous big rigs. So we'll talk about that here this afternoon on KLBJ. And how about this? You know, you always got to pay attention to this stuff, especially some of these crazy laws that happen out on the West Coast, because they seem to find their ways into our part of the world, right? So a California lawmaker is going to try to introduce a bill that would keep your boss from calling you after hours. Why is the government getting involved in this kind of stuff in the workplace, right? So we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. And you are welcome to join us here this afternoon on Easter Sunday, 512-836-0590. Give us a call or send us a text. You want to take Easter Sunday off? I understand that too. Everybody else is. But you're welcome to call or text if you'd like to do that. So I mentioned right off the top here some disturbing local stories, disturbing to me in that my guess is at least two out of the three have a common theme having to do with the homeless. I'll leave those for just a moment. The first one up here is from K-View, and it's about more street takeovers in our city. Last night, street takeovers, car meetups is what they're called by K-View, and APD responded to a number of these incidents just yesterday. The first one, according to K-View, started around 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, around 50 cars swaying in and out of lanes on East MLK Jr. Boulevard near Pershing Drive. Police responded. They sectioned off the area, according to KVU, declared it an unlawful assembly. And the crowd began to disperse after about an hour, after APD threatened to use a chemical deterrent to disperse the crowd. So, not long after that, then, another meetup at Capitol Plaza near I-35 and Cameron Road. APD responded, and they dispersed fairly quickly after that incident. And then there was another meetup last night around 9 o'clock, East MLK Jr. Boulevard and Airport Boulevard. And apparently no issues out of that, apparently no arrests. APD Watch Command said yesterday evening that they were expecting more of these takeovers and car meetups to occur throughout the night. I haven't seen any more reports since then. I do remember, what was it, a year ago or more, there was a DPS, right, when we were short on police, which we still are. But there was a street takeover task force, right? We had a surge in these kind of things, and a task force tried to address that, and they seemed to go away for a time. Plus, wasn't there a couple of laws that Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed that said they were going to crack down on this stuff, that maybe, you know, your cars would be seized or forfeited if you're caught in this kind of stuff, and some kind of penalties? Apparently, none of that's come into play here. And you just wonder, the police don't have time to mess with this stuff, right? If nobody's hurt, obviously it takes up precious time from them that they could be responding to other calls, other places. Nobody's hurt. Okay, we know there's other incidents that have happened where people have been hurt. And you just wonder, even if they did make some arrests in that, would our local DA's office just look the other way and nothing would happen? Is that a big reason that maybe nothing has come out of all this stuff? Just guessing. Throw that out to you this afternoon here, 512-836-0590. Here's a couple other local stories. And my speculation, don't know this to be factual, just speculation, is that there's a homelessness theme running through these next two stories. This one's from KXAN, and they've done some good reporting here. They say that there's been 57 fires. Austin Fire Department has recorded that many. 57 fires in vacant buildings over the last year. Officials from Austin Fire Department said a majority of those fires involve people experiencing homelessness. The Austin Fire Department Assistant Chief told KXAN that they've started keeping track of these fires that break out in abandoned structures. He said once crews were on the scene, it's pretty obvious that an abandoned building had been inhabited by homeless people. And so, where are the city council leaders, so-called leaders, right? Where are the losers on our city council who have ignored the will of the people? And voting that took place over 2 years ago now, that we wanted some control over where homeless people were camping out and where they could be and all the rest. Forget that, right? Now we see yet another example of when we look the other way and let them do whatever they want to do, fires result in at least 57 vacant buildings so far tracked by KXAN over the last year or so. So we're going to keep this going on. You see the reports out in L.A. just this weekend where they got fires in downtown L.A. set by homeless. It's out of control. And we're headed that direction if we're not there already, right? This from KXAN. Then another story from K-View. And this was situation that happened on Friday. APD reports they're investigating two people attacked with a machete in South Austin Friday night. The suspect hadn't been identified at the time of this report. They don't know the exact location of the attacks. It's believed to have been in the vicinity of the 1800 block of West Ben White Boulevard. Wasn't there stories not that long ago about some guy, maybe more, but at least one guy that was wandering around some of these camps in the woods with a big machete? A lot of the neighbors living nearby were concerned about all this. I'm not suggesting he's the one involved in this, but it seems like when there's machete attacks, usually homeless are involved. So once again, thanks to the local city council, our so-called city leaders, who have defunded police, who've made the city less safe and have given the homeless more free rein to do just this kind of stuff. Sad news to start off with on an Easter Sunday holiday weekend, but that's where it's at, and we're just giving that to you here on KLBJ. 512-836-0590 is our phone number. Give us a call or send us a text. We're just getting started. Lots more to come here. Stay with us on KLBJ. Hey, thanks for being with us, and happy Easter holiday weekend here on News Radio KLBJ. Happy Easter Sunday to you. Kenny Rahmeyer live and local with you this afternoon on KLBJ. Started out with a couple of local stories. A couple of them, I believe, one of them for sure has to do with homeless. KXAN reports that Austin Fire Department's been tracking 57 fires so far this year in vacant buildings over the last 12 months or so, and that the majority of those fires involved people experiencing homelessness. And then Acadia reports of another machete attack. Two people attacked with a machete. A guy with some machete in South Austin Friday night. Don't know the suspect at the time of this report. Maybe that wasn't a homeless person, although that's my speculation. And I'm being critical of the Austin City Council, so-called city leadership, the mayor and others, for how they've defunded police, how they've ignored the will of the people in trying to help contain where the homeless can camp and where they can be, and all of that. And looks like Laura's got a comment on that this afternoon here on KLBJ. Hi, Laura. Welcome.
Hi, happy Easter, first of all.
Happy Easter to you. Thank you.
Appreciate you being here today. But,
of course.
You know, my comment is just to tie it all together. It is squarely in the hands of our quote-unquote city leadership. You know, we have propositions. We have, you know, Senate House bills that address each of these that, you know, It dates back 3 years, even in some cases, you know, and so the responsibility is clearly upon their shoulders. This shouldn't still be happening. It's unfortunate that it still is happening. But, you know, this is a mental health crisis. You know, shelters without addressing the root of the problem is not going to work. It's a formula for failure, and I appreciate you calling it out.
Laura, it's definitely a complicated problem, right? There's many elements to it. You mentioned the mental health component, and there's other issues, but I guess we're just talking in a broader sense about how the city council, again, so-called leadership, apparently, you know, they're looking the other way. They're not doing anything meaningful about it. You hear results of some private businesses pooling their money together and making a bigger impact on trying to help a bunch of homeless people than our city has done, spending tens of millions of dollars over many years with a so-called coordinated effort. And that's showing virtually no results. So it's very frustrating. And those of us who are paying attention, like you are, where does it leave us, and how bad does it have to get before something changes?
Well, exactly. And, you know, I mean, there are sanctions that are baked into those, Senate House bill, you know, the camping ban, for example. If a community fails to enforce it, there are sanctions, but those aren't being enforced either. So, you know, where does that leave us exactly?
Laura, it's great to hear from you this afternoon. Thanks for spending a little time with us here on KLBJ. 512-836-0590. Give us a call or send us a text. It's that easy. I mentioned, start the program, a couple of powerful Easter messages this weekend. So this one is not exactly designed to be an Easter message per se, but it did happen over Easter weekend, and I think it plays into this, and I'll tell you how in just a moment. I'm referring to the memorial service, the funeral service for that slain New York Police Department officer, Jonathan Dillard. This was yesterday, and I don't know if you saw some of the coverage, family, friends, literally thousands of people there, many of them police from all over the country. And Diller's widow, Stephanie Diller, she got a standing ovation as she came up to the church lectern and she delivered her remarks. It was an incredibly strong eulogy. I think of someone, a young lady like that, addressing so many thousands of people and in such grief. But she did a very good job, and I'm going to share some of her remarks with you. She thanked the public for the outpouring of support. But she had the courage also to ask a few pointed questions to the local phony weasel politicians who clearly share a blame in and a career criminal being out on the streets, the one that took the life of her husband and father of a young, what, one-year-old? And how many more? That's the operative question. How many more before there's change? Let's have you listen to a little bit of Stephanie Diller, the widow of that police officer in New York City, Jonathan Diller, yesterday at his funeral.
My husband died a hero, but he also lived as one. Our world will never be the same, but I know I speak for everyone when I say I could not be more proud of him. It's been 2 years and 2 months since Detective Rivera and Detective Mora made the ultimate sacrifice, just like my husband, Jonathan Diller. Dominique Rivera stood in front of all the elected officials present today pleading for change. That change never came. And now my son will grow up without his father. I will grow old without my husband. And his parents have to say goodbye to their child. How many more police officers and how many more families need to make the ultimate sacrifice before we start protecting them? I don't wish this kind of pain on anyone. Jonathan lived his life doing good for people, and it's now time for people to do good for all the officers he represents.
Well, that's just some of the remarks that she gave yesterday. Good for her for having the courage and the conviction to stand up and the strength to make those remarks. But her operative question there, how many more? And I don't want to co-opt such a grief-stricken moment there, a powerful moment. I want to support that in any way I can, and by saying what I'm saying here, I hope it is supportive, because I think she's lit a fuse. Now, if somebody like a Trump can latch onto it, which he's prone to do, I'm surprised he hasn't already, but any politician who's fed up with the kind of thing she's talking about, the woke DAs, the defund the police movements, the judges, the judicial system we have that's broken clearly when it lets career criminals out on the streets time after time after time, multiple chances. This guy had, what, 21 offenses? The guy that killed Jonathan Diller, the police. So how many more? And that question, how many more, could be used for a lot of situations that our politicians are involved in and issues that are top of mind with a lot of people in this election cycle. How many more? Let's focus on what she just said. How many more police officers have to be killed before we crack down on the career criminals in our judicial system, the judges, the DAs, the prosecutors, these lame, phony weasels that don't do enough? Okay, so that's one huge situation, law enforcement, safety in our streets, right? We're all dealing with that. Just talked about it here locally, the machete attacks. Fires being set by a bunch of homeless people. Okay, so how many more before there's change? You could ask the same question on the immigration front. How many more illegals have to come across our borders from the north, from the south, before there will be any meaningful change, but before people will say enough, can't take it anymore? How many more of these woke DAs that have either been elected and get to stay in office or are going to be elected, or, you know, is there some way to get them out of there? I don't think Austin's going to be very successful at trying to unseat the DA that's in place now. If it couldn't have been done back during the primary, I don't have a lot of hope it's going to be done in this blue dot in a red state, given the situation he's in right now. But the point is, how many more? That question can resonate to be a great bumper sticker. How many more? And depending on who's behind that question and what questions they're asking, you're going to know who that bumper sticker represents. It's not President Biden. It's not many on the left, those that are letting the illegals come in droves. It's not representing those who are defunding the police at every turn. It's not those who are supporting these woke DAs, these worthless DAs, right? So it could become a very powerful, short little message that resonates, I think, across the board in a lot of ways, to where people are finally going to say, no, I'm done. I've had enough. You don't have to ask me how many more. I've had enough, and I'm going to try to do something about it. Don't know if any politician is going to try to take it that way. Just a thought. It's a very powerful message from that young lady, and I'm guessing she wouldn't mind if some people latched onto it and tried to amplify it and use it in the right way in memory of her husband to try to make some positive difference on behalf of law enforcement and maybe some other causes as well. It's just a thought. 512-836-0590 if you have a thought on that. I did think that Cardinal Timothy Dolan there, the Archbishop of the Catholic Church in New York, he was one of those that latched on to what she had to say and delivered some very powerful remarks in his comments on this Easter weekend. And I'm just going to give you a few of them here. Said the powers who are giggling and tap dancing, Good Friday afternoon, sin, Satan, hate, death, they're on the run. Jesus is risen. Dear Stephanie, beloved little Ryan, beloved cops, from deep down come sobs that make us tremble. Questions about why, what if, we're with you beneath the cross. Yet also from way far within, we sense a kind of hope, a flicker of light, a guarantee that God's love and the fragile life he gave all of us will endure for all eternity. That this drama we call life is, in the end, not a tragedy, but a comedy which ends happily ever after. That's Easter, a blessed one to all. Those comments from Cardinal Timothy Dolan, the Archbishop of New York. We'll have more coming up. Quick news break. Stay with us here on KLBJ. Hey, Kenny Rahmeyer with you. Happy Easter Sunday. Thanks a lot for being with us live and local this afternoon and weekends with Kenny Rahmeyer on News Radio KLBJ. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this as we're going to move on to some other news. I mentioned the top of the show, some powerful messages over this Easter weekend. You just heard a couple right before the news break. One from a slain New York City police officer, Jonathan Diller's wife. The eulogy she had for him at his funeral service yesterday. And then some words from the Archbishop of New York and the Catholic Church, Timothy Dolan. So about Easter. So our leading politicians, if you want to call them that, leading, whatever, that's what we got, right? President Biden and his Republican contender, former President Trump, both issued Easter messages this weekend. Biden's was a solemn message, as it's being described. Reminders of the story of Jesus' sacrifice with blessings from the president and the first lady. All right, appropriate enough. Former President Trump, as it's described before noon Eastern today, he had 43 postings on Truth Social, many of which critical of the people involved in all the legal action being taken against him. The judges, prosecutors, family members in some cases, not to mention, and I'll get to this in a moment, the White House banning religious-themed Easter egg designs for the Easter egg roll on Monday. The White House honoring Transgender Day of Visibility on the same day as Easter. Now, fair game, I suppose, in the culture wars, and I'll, again, clarification on some of that, because the White House has got an answer on both of those fronts. But here's where I think the former president really made a mistake. He retweeted a story that was titled The Crucifixion of Donald Trump, and whatever that was about, right? Who knows? But just that's just bad form on Easter Sunday, sir. Don't, at any time, frankly, much less on Easter Sunday, compare yourself to Jesus in any way. I don't care who was doing the writing about it. Don't repost that nonsense. Don't equate yourself, even metaphorically, with a crucifixion of Jesus. I think that's a stupid move on the part of the former president on this Easter weekend. Now, to the part about this has been acknowledged and promoted by the White House as Transgender Day of Visibility. Apparently, this goes back to, I think, at least 2010. This has been the day of transgender visibility since then, and it happens on March 31st. Obviously, today's Easter Sunday. It happened on the same day. Well, the president put out a message in support of all the transgenders and all the rest, right? On this very sacred day for those of us who consider ourselves Christians. All right, keep that in mind. And then there's this other issue about the Easter egg roll, the annual event that started many years ago. It used to be on the grounds of the Capitol, if you're not familiar with that. And then they've, for some reason, I think it might have been Rutherford B. Hayes' wife, the first lady at that time, said, hey, you can have it over here on the White House lawn. And so that's how the tradition started. So the Easter egg roll, a lot of kids get to come and participate, right? But you can have a little contest here, decorate your Easter egg in some way. But here's the issue. It can't include any questionable content, religious symbols, overtly religious themes, or partisan political statements. And so the White House and the American Egg Board say, hey, this has been this way for years. Don't just criticize us. You could have criticized other presidents, other administrations. I don't remember this being a big issue in previous years, Republican or Democrats in the White House. My take is President Biden could have chained all this up if he wanted to. Change the policy. Get with the American Egg Board and say, we're going to change it this year. We're going to allow Easter egg submissions with decorations that include religious symbols or overtly religious themes. We're gonna allow that. Nothing questionable, right? You can stick with that. And if you can stay away from the political statements, okay. But why cut out religion around Easter Sunday? Right? I mean, I'll tell you why. This sounds like a bunch of Obama retreads in charge. I'm wondering if Biden even knew what was going on with any of this stuff, with the Transgender Day of Visibility holiday, and of course, with the decorated Easter egg roll. I mean, just look at the sheer numbers. Just look at the sheer numbers here. First of all, we know that certainly religion is on the decline, sadly, in the United States. Sad to talk about that on Easter Sunday, but that's how it is. Gallup says 47% of us identify as religious. Well, that's not very many, and that number's gone down from years past. Okay, keep that in mind. 47% identify as religious. Well, about two-thirds of adults consider themselves Christian or identify as Christian. In the United States, that would be 170-some million people. About 1% of the adult population identifies as transgender. That would be about 2.5 million people. You do the numbers there. President Biden, if he wanted to be on safe ground, he's going to take a chance and tick off a few people at the expense of ticking off a whole bunch of other people. He could have done it in a different way if he'd have chosen to do that. I'm guessing he didn't know anything about it. The Obama retreads are in charge, and this just smacks of something that would have happened under the Obama administration to do this kind of stuff on Easter Sunday. And by the way, you can't decorate your eggs with any religious themes. Look at the numbers in an election year. Common sense would say, you know what? I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to tick off the transgenders and try to have some reverence for Easter Sunday and figure out a different way. We'll acknowledge the transgenders tomorrow. Oh, no, that's April Fool's Day. Can't do it then. All right, could have done it Saturday. Whatever, they could have worked around it. Culture wars wears you out. Unfortunately, I think the administration made some bad calls here. Could have been done differently. I'm going to move on because there's lots of other stuff to talk about. 512-836-0590 if you have an opinion on that. So Reuters getting into a little presidential politics here, briefly. It's mind-numbing, I know, with still, what, 6-7 months out from November. Reuters reports that the Vice President Kamala Harris is stepping out of the shadow of President Joe Biden and is going to take a more high-profile effort to try to woo the Latino vote, to woo the African-American vote, to some of these groups that seem to be, at least in some measure moving away from the Democrat Party. So she's going to try to more aggressively take on those liberals who are targeting Biden over his pro-Israel stance. Going to try to take on those who were concerned about his age and leadership capabilities. And I'm saying, you know, she might as well be taking the lead on it and getting the credit for doing it, because if you're voting for Joe Biden, you're voting for her, for President of the United States. Nikki Haley got that one right. That's exactly what's going on. Now, you could criticize the move from a political standpoint because her approval ratings are worse than Biden's. And yet her numbers are about as good as Biden's and better than most anybody else on the Democrat front. About 56% of black people approve of Biden's job performance. Low figures for a group that typically votes 9-1 for Democrats in presidential elections. So that's the rationale that Reuters says the White House team is going to use to try to target her efforts in trying to shore up some support for Biden in some of these demographics where he's not doing so well. Another article this weekend about Biden's continuing to be upset with the media because they're not, at least from his vantage point, they're not portraying his numbers, his poll numbers, in a more positive light. And he's continuing to be upset with that. His aides say he's got a good story to share, and it's largely been ignored by the press. You know, you just shake your head when it's, how much more complicit could the media be, for the most part, in being supportive of Biden, and yet he's still griping about him? I don't know if you've noticed, I saw a couple articles here recently. This was just on Tuesday. President Biden mentioned the word Bidenomics. They say that's the first time that he's mentioned that word in 2 months. That the president himself, Democrats in Congress, and others have pretty much walked away from that little slogan. Another report here says Bidenomics, mentions by congressional Democrats, dropped during the fall and now has nearly disappeared. Well, little wonder. Inflation is still hanging around, and there's a lot of prices at the grocery store for many items and that are still pretty high, and that's where it impacts people the most. Gas prices have gone up a little bit, and so inflation is still hanging around, even as it's come down somewhat. 512-836-0590 here on KLBJ. I saw this New York Times article this weekend. Boy, I'm glad the Times has gotten over the election denial with the Trumpers is such a big deal, right? Well, here's a New York Times piece. It's lamenting the outcome of the 2000 election, still griping about the butterfly ballots, and essentially saying, had those ballots been designed differently, Al Gore would have been president of the United States and not Bush. Boy, I'm glad they got over it 24 years later. But here I did, if you read down in the piece, though, oh, gee, wait a minute. About this, New York Times says it's gotten harder to see signs of any Biden bump from his State of the Union message. Taken together, polls from Fox, CNBC, and Quinnipiac said the presidential race is essentially unchanged. Trump still holding a narrow lead nationwide, and the president's approval rating doesn't seem discernibly higher either. Some rare reporting of the truth from the New York Times there. And then some articles this weekend about how the Democrats are circling the wagons and going after RFK Jr. in a big way. He, of course, has got a new running mate now for vice president. Says he wants to be a spoiler for both Trump and Biden. And a piece this weekend says the Democrats are desperate to try to figure out some way of getting rid of Kennedy, and they're marshaling their resources now. They're coordinating their efforts, allies and liberal groups escalating their efforts against RFK Jr. in the days and weeks ahead. We'll see where that goes. And I don't know if you caught Saturday Night Live last night. It was kind of interesting. Saturday Night Live even taking a couple of jabs at President Biden. I don't know how this is going to work. NBC's one of those friendly networks to the Biden administration for the most part. But here's Saturday Night Live and the Weekend Update. And Michael Che was taking Biden to task a little bit about this most recent fundraiser he had with Clinton and Obama.
More than 5,000 people attended a Democratic fundraiser at Radio City Music Hall featuring big-name celebrities like Barack Obama, Stephen Colbert, and Lizzo, as well as lesser-known celebrities like President Joe Biden.
All right, sure, everybody got a good laugh on that one, but when he implied that there's issues between the African-American vote and the president, well, that didn't go over so well with the audience. Here's that.
President Biden said Friday that he would visit the site of the Baltimore bridge collapse because, like that bridge, Biden is no longer connecting with black communities. You got to read the polls.
Wow. Yeah, read the polls. And so I'll just be interested to see as the months go by and the election gets closer and closer, whether, I mean, we know they're piling on Trump on any given program, but will they continue to take a few jabs at Biden? We'll see. Also on the Weekend Update, and I don't want to spend any time on it here because it's old news now, they went after the Parent Network, which was pretty good of them to not look the other way on that disastrous handling of the Ronna McDaniel situation. Right? The RNC chair, the former RNC chair that was ousted, and we talked a lot about it last weekend. Just a couple of developments on that this weekend. Apparently, her original deal and original preference was she was just going to appear on NBC News only as a contributor. But the muckety-mucks there within NBC said, well, we'd like for you to consider MSNBC and some of our other properties as well. And so she got a more lucrative contract as they wooed her to go beyond just appearances on NBC. And then look where it turned out. And they fell flat on their face with all that. So what I'm going to be interested in is to see where the ratings go from here. The story is pretty much over at this point. Will that core Trump-hating group stick with the NBC network, MSNBC, and all the rest? Will there be any discernible movement in the ratings? Again, my sense is they're going to stay with them at least through the election season. You know, the haters are going to be there on that network because they pride themselves on that. How will it go after the election? Don't know. And maybe there'll be some slippage. I don't think a lot of pro-Trumpers are watching NBC or MSNBC anyway. So that's why I wonder if there's not going to be a lot of movement. We know there's a lot of distrust in the media. I was interested to see that the X network, Musk is looking to hire, used to be with Fox, used to be with CBS, Catherine Herridge. You probably saw some of her work on both of those networks as an investigative reporter. Musk apparently interested in hiring her to do some straight-up reporting for the X property. It'll be interesting to see if that pans out and see if there's any appetite for straight-up reporting along the lines of what she was pretty good at. We'll see about that. You know, just in terms of can the ratings move one way or the other for MSNBC, it certainly did for Harvard to see some of their numbers, right, with all the anti-Semitic shenanigans from not that long ago. 5% drop in total applicants to Harvard University. A 17% drop in early admissions applications to Harvard. So people do pay attention and can be influenced by stuff that's going on. I don't know if that's going to happen on MSNBC or not, but we'll follow that and see where it goes. Okay, quick break and then more to come. Stay with us on KLBJ. Hey, Kenny Rahlmeyer back with you live and local on this Easter holiday, Easter Sunday. Thanks for being with us. Happy Easter to you. A couple of texts have come in. I like this one. Kenny, I know you've been in Austin for a long time. There are many of, let's see, what's the old Austinites that love our little weird blue dot in the middle of a giant red Lone Star State. You and your fellow wing nuts need to stop trying to turn Austin redder, but focus more on keeping the rest of Texas from turning blue. I don't think there's a whole lot of chance the rest of Texas is turning blue And in terms of, you know, trying to make Austin Redding, let me tell you, you've been around for a long time. Good for you. We used to just have to worry about some tree huggers, worried about salamanders and that. This city has lurched to the left dramatically over the years and continues to lean that way in a very negative way. And it's changing the makeup of this city. You can't tell me you're satisfied with how things are changing in this city. You can't even go downtown and feel safe about it these days. Are you kidding? But thanks for the text. Here's another one. Kenny, you were on the right track with your comments about Obama being in charge. Thanks for your voice. Okay. And all right, still time for you to jump in. 512-836-0590. I mentioned right at the top this story, Washington Post, big headline story, ready or not, self-driving big rigs are coming to America's highways. So a long piece, don't have a lot of time to talk about it. Texas has been the center of autonomous truck testing for many years. Also in Oklahoma and New Mexico, among other places. But, I mean, some of this stuff is going to be happening very quickly. These robot trucks, a lot of concerns about this. Highway safety, loss of jobs, not a lot of regulations at the federal level. Some states that have tried to do something about keeping the roads safe from these driverless big rigs. But, I mean, it's going to be happening sooner than later. One company, Aurora, says it plans to have about 20 fully autonomous trucks working the stretch between Dallas and Houston by the end of this year, eventually plans to operate thousands of trucks all across America. Now, this company's been making about 100 deliveries a week for FedEx, Uber Freight, and others between Dallas and Houston since 2020. So just a heads up, Washington Post says it's coming sooner than later. I mentioned this story also. San Francisco lawmaker wants to introduce a bill. This, of course, out in California, but it would give employees the legal right to ignore calls from their boss after hours, emails, texts, and other communications, same way. And look, it just begs the question, why are lawmakers thinking they need to get involved? Now, this guy apparently claims to be an expert and says that, you know, he's been talking to people and this availability creep is really affecting so many people's lives in a negative way. Well, just who's he? What does he know about it? I'd say stay out of it. Don't have time. Maybe one of these days I'll tell you, back in my computer sales days when we were trying to establish a worldwide service agreement for one of the big airlines, and the point guy for this over in Europe where they had a huge presence was our guy in France. He never worked. I could never get him. I had to call him at home, interrupt his dinner, which he didn't like. It was like, how are you going to get stuff done? And this idea apparently originated in France and Australia. So we want to be more like them? I don't think so. I don't think that's a good move. Hey, we'll wrap up here with executive producer Garrett jumping in. Garrett, happy Easter to you.
You as well.
And so you, right before the show, I said about you've been to Vegas, and you said you have been, right?
I have, yeah, that's
any
right.
Any luck out in Vegas?
No, not at all.
Come on.
Negative.
It's hoping for something good. What do you put? Do you play the slots? You play blackjack, a little bit everything? What
slots
have you been
doing? Slots and blackjack and roulette as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
But just never had any good luck with it?
I've been once, so no.
Okay.
Not at all.
So how about this? This is a big night for somebody at Caesar's Palace in Vegas. I've been there for several times, you know, for work-related stuff. Never gambled one time. Not a gambler. I see these guys losing their rear ends. I'm thinking, why would you want to do that, right? And they think they're so expert at it. They're losing like crazy.
Yeah.
But how about this person at Caesar's in Vegas won the jackpot on the slot machine 3 times.
Wow.
In one night. Same slot. The first time, around 9:30, $125,000 jackpot. Boom. About 11 o'clock, another $383,000 on the same machine. And then around 12:30 a.m., another $159,000.
That's crazy.
Three times, three wins on the same machine, $667,000. What are the odds of that?
Wow. That's ridiculous.
I mean, that doesn't ever happen, does it?
No, never.
So I was hoping to ask you, you keep playing the same machine after you win big, you move on to another one, right? I need some advice here, Garrett, what to do. We'll save that for next time. How about it?
All right.
Happy Easter. Thanks for chiming in. Thank you for listening on this Easter Sunday. Hope you've had a safe and happy Easter holiday. Thanks a lot for being with us. The latest news coming up next, right here on News Radio KLBJ. Plan on being back with you next weekend.